Are you a man looking for an intensive program to help you overcome your sexually addictive behaviors? Gateway to Freedom is your answer. Gateway to Freedom is a three-day intensive workshop for men seeking to overcome sexually addictive behaviors. Whether married, single, or divorced, Gateway to Freedom will help men regain hope for a new life of purity and real contentment. The workshop is conducted by experts in the field of sexual addiction recovery. Your experts have over 35 years of combined experience. Read testimonials of workshop alumni at gatewaymen.com. Get all the info and register online at gatewaymen.com or call 1-800-49-PURITY.
Hi, my name is Jonathan, and I'm the founder of the Gateway to Freedom Workshop. I want to personally invite you to be part of our next intensive coming up April 5th through the 7th. So call us today at 1-800-49-PURITY or visit us online at gatewaymen.com.
Welcome to Pure Sex Radio, training men, educating women. Are you ready to get real and start living each day in purity? This dynamic program is designed to educate, encourage, and equip listeners with the tools necessary for living a life of sexual purity. Pure Sex Radio brings you the best in mobile talk radio. Listen to real-life struggles, learn how to overcome lust, pornography, and sex addiction, and get serious about purity.
Good day, radio listeners. Welcome to this week's edition of the Pure Sex Radio broadcast. We're glad to have you here with us. My name is Jonathan, and I'm here with a special guest today that is in the Atlanta, Georgia area, John Glisson. So, John, how you doing?
I am doing well. Thank you.
Excellent. Well, John, we're gonna do a two-part series here where we want to kind of let our listeners know a little bit about you and then sort of some things about what you're doing in ministry. But I want you to let our listeners know, maybe just kind of start sharing your story. We'd like to hear about just your own personal story of sexual brokenness and recovery, because, you know, one of the things that we care about here at Be Broken Ministries is people's story. We really value story. And we believe that the best way that we can connect with one another in our brokenness is by being honest about our stories. And so I think it'd be a real blessing for our listeners if you would just share your story with us, and of course, I'll interject some questions, and we'll have a conversation here, but I'd like to give you the mic, so to speak, so that you can let our listeners know a little bit about your history and your own recovery journey.
Sure, I would love to. A little background information or backdrop for my current situation. I've been married for coming up on 11 years and have two boys that are 4 and 5. But as far as sexual brokenness is concerned, I have a long background with addiction to pornography, my own addiction to pornography, and was first exposed to pornography when I was 8 years old. When my father decided it was time to learn about the birds and the bees, he had pornography, and he pulled out a centerfold and opened that up and pointed to, you know, what went where and what was what. And I don't think I heard a word he said, because I was just fascinated by the images that were there. And we had pornography around the house. And, you know, I don't want to really throw my dad under the bus, that we weren't, in saying that, we weren't churchgoers. There wasn't anything that we had any moral, I guess, qualms about it from a religious perspective. So it was just, you know, this is an image of a female body, and I can use this as a way to explain these things to my son. I think that was his perspective on it.
Yeah, but at eight years old, like you said, I mean, it's so overwhelming. What kind of educational, you know, value could that have had at that moment, right?
Absolutely, yeah. So that's really exactly right. I didn't have any, or at least I don't remember having any feelings of confusion necessarily, but there was definitely fascination. I was immediately fascinated and very shortly thereafter started looking at pornography, hiding it, having that sense that it needed to be hidden, and started masturbating very early on as well, and using pornography for the purpose of masturbation.
And so what were those, what did you do with any of those feelings? I mean, it sounds like in your family environment, while there was a level of, I guess you could say, conversation about sexuality, it doesn't sound like you had any outlet for being able to talk about the confusion and the feelings that you were having as a young boy of this whole world that we know as sexuality.
Yeah, really, it was our culture, mainly being informed through our culture, friends in the neighborhood and experimentation with friends in the neighborhood and things like that happened pretty quickly after that first exposure, probably within a year or so of that first exposure to pornography. So that really was the only outlet that I did have. I didn't have any healthy outlet necessarily to talk about or discuss what was going on. And we didn't really have a conversation beyond that. I think that most dads probably feel like they need to have a talk about sex with their sons at some point in time. And that's what mine looked like. And that was a one-time thing. And that was about it. But fast forward, that was, about 8 years old. When I was 10, my parents divorced. So not long after that, he was gone, out of the home at least. And he remarried. And that really sent me off the rails more than anything, I think, was when our family broke up.
Yeah, because how did that circumstance, did you see, not probably at the moment, but looking back, do you see any direct correlation between that trauma of your parents divorcing and any sort of escalation in your sexual endeavors or your pornography use or any of that kind of stuff?
So I think one thing that was interesting, when he was gone out of the house, so was the pornography.
Oh.
Because the pornography was his stash.
Right.
And I say stash, it wasn't under the bed or hidden anything. It was, sitting on the bookshelf. But, he took his pornography with him. And my mom didn't, buy Playboys or any kind of pornographic material. So really it became mostly masturbation and fantasy at that point. And the occasional experimentation with someone in the neighborhood or something like that at that time. What I did discover, two things happened within 2 years of the divorce. The first was my grades went from straight A's to straight F's. And then the second thing was by the time I was 12, I started smoking cigarettes and smoking marijuana. And by the time I was 13, I was dropping LSD. And so that was really the bigger coping mechanism, if you want to call it that, was drug addiction.
Okay.
That took hold. And so masturbation and pornography, when I could get my hands on it, was almost a background thing. It was always there. Masturbation was, anytime I would, take a bath or shower, I would always masturbate. Why not?
Mm-hmm.
At that point in time, that was my view. It felt good. And that was the only time I had privacy was when I was bathing. So,
well, what were your, obviously it just sounds like really hard, time in life for you. I mean, as you think back on that, what were some of the predominant, emotions that you felt during that whole season of, let's say 10 to 14 years old? What were the things that were emotions you felt just about life? And then maybe emotions you felt about yourself?
Yeah, the two emotions that immediately come to mind as you ask the question are anger,
mm-hmm.
Which I wasn't emotionally intelligent enough at that point in time to necessarily put my finger on it. But looking back, I was an angry kid and also lonely. My mom took a second job to support us, and I was really lonely. From early on, I was also really lonely before my parents divorced. I was a latchkey kid and they both worked and I would come home and spend hours by myself in the house. I have a younger sister, but she was you know, at daycare or something like that, younger, in those younger years.
Mm-hmm. And so what did, you know, I really want to kind of latch on to that loneliness theme, mm-hmm. because, you know, I believe that the two emotions you just expressed are the two predominant emotions that we see in every single guy who develops a sexual addiction: anger and loneliness. And anger, a lot of times, is the more recognizable emotion,
right?
Because it sort of manifests itself in different ways, you know. But the loneliness one, I think, is one that sort of gets lost. It's like, you know, at least in a guy's anger, a lot of times he can feel a type of strength, maybe. But it's like you start talking to a guy about those feelings of loneliness that got really deeply seated into his being in childhood. And I think you can almost see this guy start kind of shriveling up, like, I don't want to, that just feels too weak. That feels too vulnerable. And so, you know, how did you, you know, obviously none of us like to feel lonely. Now, what were some of the ways in which you would cope with that? You talked about drug use and then the sexuality, but how, like, when you had these feelings of loneliness, man, how did you process those? How did you respond to that?
I think that those two elements are exactly how I responded, what you mentioned. I mentioned masturbation or pornography. Those were ways that I would kill time, mm-hmm. you know, because loneliness was, you know, the time that I was by myself, I felt lonely in those times specifically, or then use drugs. I would, you know, smoke marijuana, and those would often go together. You know, I would get high and masturbate, or get high and use pornography. And those things really, from a, I guess, a pleasure standpoint, would enhance one another in a sense.
Now, did you find that one more often led to the other, or was it just kind of an even mix of which came first?
I think it was kind of an even mix. I was certainly, through my teenage years, and even into my early 20s, more fixated in some ways on drugs. Uh-huh. You know, masturbation was always one that was just always there. It was easy, you know, when I was going off to bed, or, you know, whatever the case was, that was one that I never even thought of as an addiction. It, you know, it wasn't illegal. All guys do it. There wasn't an issue with it. It wasn't a problem for me. I didn't even think of it as a problem until later in life.
Yeah. So then give us sort of a time frame here. How long, you know, how was the drug use and pornography and all that escalating? Where were you, let's say, senior year, after you graduated? Kind of give us a time frame of how things were progressing here.
Yeah, so by the time I got into high school, you know, my lifestyle as a metalhead, pothead guy had pretty much cemented. I was the guy that wore black all the time and had long hair and was smoking dope and everybody knew it, and dropping LSD on the weekend and everybody knew it. And then, you know, the sexuality was always background. And I had a few girlfriends here and there. I wasn't very confident with girls, and so pornography was an easy out for that. But I had a few girlfriends and sexual encounters with them as well. But by the time I got into high school, part of that fitting in and also an encounter with a bully in high school brought me into occult practices for a few years, which was, you know, in part a way to fit in, and in another part a way to feel powerful when I was always very skinny and tall and braces and glasses and, you know, all right. of that. So I didn't feel powerful, but that lent me, if you will, a feeling of power.
So then when did you, or how did you eventually get to what we generally think of as sort of rock bottom, or when did you start having any type of inkling that, man, the direction my life is going with the drugs and the porn and then the occult practices, when did you start having any type of recognition that this probably isn't a healthy direction for my life?
Yeah, well, it was a bit of a long road and a bit roundabout, but to try and you know, compress the story a little bit on that. I dropped out of high school after my second time failing the ninth grade. And so when I was 16, I moved out on my own. And I got a little job and got a roommate and started paying bills and actually sold some drugs to make a little bit of extra money when I could, and also mainly support my own habit.
Right.
Then, you know, I was able to have and access my own stash of pornography at that point. So that was always there. But, and that went on for a few years. I just existed in that state from the time I was 16 until the time I was about 23. And I say about, I can tell you specifically, December 1996 is when I gave my life to Christ. It was the Sunday before Christmas in 1996. And my sister and my dad, ironically, had started attending a church. And I decided that it was good for my dad to go to church because he was all messed up. You know, I was thinking about him, right? Not myself and my brokenness. But I ended up going to church with them one Sunday. They always sat on the front row, and it was a charismatic church and, you know, full on. And the pastor, I don't think he gave an altar call. There are always altar calls in charismatic churches. And so I took a few steps forward, and God just got a hold of my life in a crazy way.
Yeah. So now pause for just a second, or back up a little bit, because I feel like, wow, we got there really fast. I mean, how did your dad and sister start going to church? I mean, how did you, I mean, looking back, I think sometimes we have a better vision of how the twists and turns of our life got to a certain point. So kind of take us through that. I mean, you got this period of 16 to 23-ish of just really kind of this continual slide downward, really some dark years. You know, what got your dad and sister starting to go to church, and then why on earth would you say yes to them inviting you to church? I mean, kind of help our listeners understand that process.
So, yeah, I am not really sure what got them going to church, to be perfectly honest. Mm-hmm. But they, you know, they started attending, and actually at that point in time, my sister and I had decided to join forces, and we got an apartment, and we were roommates, so we could, you know, get a nicer place. And, you know, so we had this nice apartment. And so I noticed that she had started going to church and she was attending the church with my dad. I'm not sure exactly how that happened, but they were going. But then Christmas rolled around that year. And as I mentioned, oh, this is a really good thing for my dad to go to church.
Right.
And so I went to the Christian bookstore, and I went to the Christian section, and I got the largest book on the shelf, which is the Strong's Exhaustive Concordance of the Bible, to give to him for Christmas. Here, this is going to be good for him. But the strangest thing happened, you know, and I grew up in Georgia here in the Bible Belt, right? So, I mean, Christianity, at least from a religious kind of external perspective, wasn't foreign to me.
Right.
And, you know, there's a little bit of a twist with being involved with the occult, and specifically with anything leaning towards Satanism, is it's kind of a, I think it backfires on the devil, because if you're going to believe in the devil, then you really kind of have to believe in his arch nemesis, right?
You can't be an atheist Satanist.
No. And you can't, you know, you can be a Christian hating Satanist, mm-hmm. but you can't say that Christ is not real. So I think that kind of backfires. But, you know, when I went to that bookstore, I bought myself a paperback copy of the Bible. Mm. And I knew enough, again, growing up in the Bible Belt, I knew enough to start reading it in the New Testament. And I just started reading. I'm like, oh, okay. You know, I'd never really read it before. So I picked it up. I read Matthew. I read Mark. I started reading Luke. And then that Sunday rolled around, and I went to church with my sister and my dad, and God had been, I think, preparing my heart there. When I read, you know, when I was reading the Bible, things were clicking and things were making sense as I read it. And it was really, I think, just God was all over the situation.
Yeah. So then take us through emotionally that experience of going to church, and then maybe kind of immediately after that, what were some things that you started to see happen?
Yeah. So sorry for the laughter here, but so I came home from church that day and I did the same thing I had done for the last decade. I got high.
Yeah.
But here's the thing. It was different. It felt different. I recognized my mind wandering into places that didn't feel good anymore. And I knew that I had to quit smoking pot if I was going to do this whole God thing. Right. So no old guy in the church had to come up to me and say, now, John, you need to quit smoking that pot.
Yeah.
You know, so, but to be honest, I didn't have the heart to flush it down the toilet. I mean, a guy that Saturday night had given me a bag of pot for Christmas.
Merry Christmas, right?
I know, right. Merry Christmas, you know, ho, ho, ho. So I didn't have the heart to even flush it down the toilet. So I let all my friends smoke it up for me, which they were glad to do. And I know it's a funny story, but here I learned something, because once I didn't have any more drugs, I didn't have any more friends either.
Yeah.
They stopped coming around. You know, I have just a handful of people that I've known since before that time that I'm still friends with.
Which is friends. Isn't that amazing, John, how much we learn about like real friendship and relationship when you really start to kind of get serious about recovery and what the Lord wants. It's like all of a sudden you realize, man, there's a lot of fickle friends that are out there only because of what I could provide them. And it's sort of an eye-opening experience. I mean, in some ways it can be kind of depressing, but in other ways it can be liberating, because it's like, wow, I'm not attached to the, you know, dead weight anymore.
Right. Well, it was. And one of the other things that I distinctly remember is once I got rid of drugs, and eventually I got rid of pornography and decided to swear off masturbating and all of that, you know, I felt this sense of wholeness, where I didn't have two lives that I was living anymore. And I just started getting into computers and an IT career at that point, which I didn't have the education for, but I had a knack for it. And so, you know, it was just getting started in that realm. And it was such a relief to not have to hide my habits anymore.
Right. So then how did you become part of a group? I mean, what was part of that recovery process? What did that look like in those early stages? I mean, you said you got rid of the drugs, you swore off pornography, but what were the relational connections that you began to make that started to help you in that process of really becoming a new man?
Yeah. So it was a bit of a whirlwind. I got radically saved. You know, I was that guy that got just totally radically saved. And I was so hungry, man. I was hungry for God. And 8 months after I got saved, I moved to Dallas, Texas, and went to Christ for the Nations Bible school. Mm-hmm. I quit my job and moved to Texas and went to Bible school. God miraculously provided for me while I was there, another job. But, you know, that's really, I shifted, and that was what things looked like. I was there for 2.5 years and graduated Bible school. And I think that environment, gave me a reprieve, very accountable, no internet, no TV, you know, very, you know, Christian bubble environment at Bible school for 2.5 years there. And so because my salvation seems so kind of radical, you know, you have that kind of grace bubble that new Christians often live in for a few months or so. Mm-hmm. And then that just, I think that got prolonged for another 2.5 years while I was in Bible school as a new Christian. But then things really started to unravel after I graduated Bible school. I moved back home. And I got a DSL connection and I got isolated, and man, internet pornography was a new thing for me, because before that it was, you know, mail order videos and magazines, but now the internet provided a whole new world of opportunities, if you will, to view pornography. Mm-hmm. And I was one of the lowest places in my life was being a Bible school graduate who could not stop using pornography.
So yeah. So then how did you deal with that? Because I think what happens to a lot of Christians is exactly what you're talking about there. They realize there's still this connection to this deeply wounded place that's from long ago, you know, in their histories. and yet they've got this passion for God and they know the truth and they love the Lord, but they can't quite make that bridge of how does this, the truth of the gospel, connect with this deeply wounded place in my being that wasn't just magically changed through trusting Christ as my Savior.
Yeah, I can absolutely relate. I really, as I mentioned, got saved in a charismatic church. CF and I was a charismatic Bible school. I had to shed my deliverance model of this issue, mm-hmm. you know, that I wasn't going to be zapped. Because, I mean, I had gone through, I mean, I'd had hands laid on me and prayer and all that stuff. And, you know, it wasn't working. And really, it wasn't until I met a girl, we started dating, and in 2002, we got married. So I graduated in 99, and 2002, got married. Was, you know, using pornography and struggling and trying to swear it off and you know, while at the same time, you know, keeping the secret. And I let her know one time, completely sure that she was going to dump me, but she sure didn't. We got married, but then four months after we got married, we landed in a counselor's office, and that counselor hit me with, you know, you're addicted to pornography. Mm-hmm. And I had never even thought of the term porn addiction or sex addiction before sitting in that counselor's office in that very first appointment. And that nailed me. That really nailed me.
So in our last few minutes here in this broadcast, maybe share with our listeners what that process looked like then of sort of beginning to break free from the compulsion, maybe having some of these deep wounds healed. What was that process like for you in those stages of, hey, I've actually now discovered and embraced, I got a porn addiction problem?
Yeah. Well, you know, I mentioned being married. Man, I come from a background of divorce. Mm. My parents divorced. My dad, I've had three stepmothers since my parents divorced. And my mom is remarried. So, I mean, my marriage, being successful in my marriage, was incredibly important to me. So I spent a long time in counseling and also did get into a group eventually, about 6 months after that porn addiction. It took me a while to come to grips with it and get into a group, but I eventually got into a group. And that really started a baseline for me, that was 10 years ago now. And I spent several years in a group and ended up eventually leading that group and moving on into some ministry that I think you wanted to talk about in the next segment.
Yeah. Well, I want to ask you, what did you see as kind of the primary obstacle for you to finally saying, yeah, I can see benefit in being part of a group. I do need some help. I mean, what was the biggest obstacle to you embracing that?
I think part of it was just getting over, I mentioned that deliverance mentality. I really had to get over that. Mm-hmm. I had to be delivered from the idea of being delivered. that this wasn't just going to go away because I said the right prayer or because I got my life right with God, right, so to speak, that I had issues that needed addressing that were going to require a process from me. So,
yeah, it's like a deep cleansing that has to go on. And I think I
was an unrecovered addict.
Yeah. And I think that's really a hard thing. And that's why I said, you know, there's so many Christians out there that can identify with that disconnect, that, man, I don't even recognize or even know some of these deep wounds in my soul that the Lord wants to heal, but I don't know how to get there because I keep sort of tunnel vision on the process or the methods of recovery rather than really engaging that relational component of how are we going to dig down into these deep areas together with the Lord and with some other trusted individuals to really start healing some of those deep areas.
Yeah.
Well, John, I appreciate you being with us. And listeners, you know, hang on. Next week, we're going to have John back to go a little bit more into the kind of the recovery aspect and some insights there, and then also share some of the resources that they have in his ministry, Pure Community. And we'll talk about that next week. So we hope you're back here with us on the Pure Sex Radio broadcast.
Pure Sex Radio is paid for by Be Broken Ministries. Visit us online at puresexradio.com.